Hey guys, this is Lauren.
And Mike.
And you are listening to Marriage is a Scream. I'm opening up the first episode with Raymire's Hollow, or Hex Hollow as some call it. The Hex House, as the locals know it, was once home to Nelson Raymire, a notorious powwow doctor, until he was brutally murdered in 1928 by three men. Let's be honest, one was a child. He was 14. They all believed that Raymire had cursed them using witchcraft. I decided on this particular topic because we're from Pennsylvania, and Thursday is Thanksgiving, and it will be the 91st anniversary of this particular event.
So this guy legitimately was killed on Thanksgiving Day.
Well, I mean, firstly, they didn't mean to kill him. Secondly, they came to his house.
How do you accidentally,
the day before Thanksgiving?
How do you accidentally not kill somebody on Thanksgiving? I'm looking forward to hearing this story because I'm a little bit perplexed on how they accidentally went to kill him, but I don't get that. But okay.
Okay, so before we get into it, I'd like to say thanks to Shane Free and Rob Phoenix, who were both a great help when I was fact-checking for this episode. Shane Free is the director of the documentary Hex Hollow, Witchcraft and Murder in Pennsylvania, which is available on Blu-ray and DVD, or if you are more into streaming, you can find it on iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play. Rob Phoenix is a powwow expert and runs the Hex Hollow Facebook page. You can see his powwow page at pagermanpowwow.com or pagermanpowwow.com. And he has a whole page talking about Pennsylvania German powwow.
I have a question.
What?
You're probably going to get into this a little bit more, but what does it mean powwow? I mean, in my mind, that draws up a completely different image.
So that's actually coming up, like, right now. So.
Oh, okay. So you're going to share that with me. All right.
Yeah.
I was just thinking.
Well, you should know that I'm not just going to say something that's so unknown and then be like,
oh, I figured you would.
Hope you guys figure out what that means later.
No, I get that.
Okay, so.
I mean, you do that to me all the time. Hope you figure it out later. But
you have Google.
Yeah. Google it on Google.
Okay, so Raymire's Hollow is located in central Pennsylvania in York County near the Maryland border. It's now called Spring Valley County Park. It's known locally as Hex Hollow. At a point in time, this was the home of Pennsylvania Dutch powwow doctor Nelson Raymire. Now, here we are. I know what you're thinking. What's a powwow doctor? Well, let me give you a little briefing on that so you can follow along with the rest of the story. Powwow medicine is a practice related to faith healing and pagan rituals inheriting traditions brought over by the Pennsylvania Dutch. It's also known as folk healing. It includes herbal remedies, ceremonies, and charms designed to heal and protect a person. In the U.S., the practice centered around a book of magical recipes called Powwows or The Long Lost Friend, which was a book written by Johann George Hamann.
Is this still practiced now? I mean, you mentioned the gentleman, and I mean, it's still an active thing?
Yeah. So powwow expert Rob Phoenix identifies as, quote, a powwow, also called a hex doctor or hexenmeister. He says that means he's a Christian that knows more than the Lord's Prayer.
Although
it's not widely known about, Rob says the community is still thriving amongst the Pennsylvania German culture. Those who are unfamiliar with powwow think it's evil when in fact it's used for good.
You know, living in the heart of where we live in the Lancaster area, there must be pretty active in this area. I just don't get to see it.
Well, I'm sure that nobody just walks around saying, hey, let me heal you.
Well, they might, but that's probably not appropriate right now.
People who go to them are probably seeking it out.
Yeah.
So, okay, so our story begins with Nelson Raymire, obviously. He was born on October 1st in 1868. He was the grandson of Christopher and Maria Raymire, who sailed from Hanover, Germany on June 1st, 1844, and landed in Baltimore in the latter part of July. They purchased a 96-acre farm in between Shrewsbury and Winterstown, PA for $300.
Huh. Imagine.
Their children constructed a series of houses on Raymire's Hollow Road. Nelson, who was estranged from his wife, Alice, lived in the log cabin by himself at this point. He's 60 years old. He's living alone in the farmhouse. His wife's taken his two daughters, Beatrice and Florence. And I believe they live in the, they lived in the cabin behind his house.
So wait, so some time has passed here. How old were they when they got here?
Nelson wasn't even born yet. So his grandparents sailed here from Germany. Oh, okay.
Well, so we fast forwarded through that. Yes. And then out came Nelson and the kids and stuff.
Yes. Okay. So his dad, Henry Raymeyer, helped build the houses that are on that land with his siblings.
Okay.
And so, yeah, so now fast forward, Nelson's 60 years old. He's estranged from his wife, and he lives in the farmhouse by himself. And, yeah, he's a farmer. People say that he was hardworking.
And he was a powwow guy.
Yeah, so he is a powwow doctor. Mm-hmm. And that's actually why his wife left.
Oh, so she was not down with his chosen profession.
She was not cool with this. She didn't like what was going on. So she took off with their daughters.
Things weren't much different then than they are now.
Okay, so now we're going to switch over to John Blymeyer. He was born in York County in 1895. His father and grandfather were both powwows. And he inherited their healing abilities, but not the strength of their skills. So, I guess a little known fact about powwows is that if you're a powwow, so a man can't teach another man or a boy about powwow.
They can't teach him?
No. So a woman has to teach a man or a boy.
So you're born with a skill set, but you're instructed by... The not by another sex. Not by another powwow, but what no, is... No,
yes, by another powwow, but they can't be of the same sex. So a powwow can be a man or a woman.
So a woman's taught by a man and a man's taught by a woman.
Correct, okay. Yes.
Why?
I don't have the answer for that. Maybe someone else does. Interesting
one to look up, right, yeah.
So when little John is just 5 years old, he suffers from, I think it's pronounced opnema, which is the wasting away of a body, believed to be brought on by a hex, but in reality, it was more likely caused by poor diet and malnutrition. His father and grandfather attempt to heal him, but are both unsuccessful. So obviously we have a family of not very good powwows, right?
Well, just not practiced.
So they take him over to Nelson Raymeyer, the man who we just talked about, who eventually heals him.
So wait a second, let me understand this. Raymeyer heals this dude.
Mm-hmm. Don't get ahead of the story, though.
I'm not getting ahead of the story. But how old is this dude when he gets healed?
He's 5.
Okay. All right. So he's a young man. Raymeyer heals him.
Yeah. So Nelson comes over a couple times, I think. He visits a few times, and eventually he heals him. At the age of 7, John attempts his first cure and is successful. Unfortunately, he is of limited intelligence. He's described as not very attractive and was really quite average when it came to being a powwow. People normally avoided him.
This guy had strikes stacked up against him.
Unless they needed something from him.
Was there money in being a powwow?
Yeah. Because of all of this stuff, obviously he was pretty lonely. Nobody wanted to hang out with him unless they needed him to do some healing stuff. And
so he's unattractive, did his job poorly... And
well, it's not that he did it poorly. He just wasn't great at it. Like, it just didn't work every time.
How's that doing it poorly and not being great different?
I'm sure he put his all into
it. He was really great at being poor.
I'm sure he put his all into it. It just wasn't happening.
He was like the Rudy of powwows.
He wanted to be good at it. He just wasn't. Just wasn't there.
Didn't have the size.
He just didn't have the right teacher. No lady teachers were there for him.
Okay, so... Rudy's not doing well. Let's keep going.
So at the age of 13, he drops out of school, which is not the best decision for someone who's apparently of limited intelligence.
Yeah, but during that period of time, you got to remember, very few people made it further than like 13, too. So they had to go to work to provide money. He just wasn't going to be good at what he was working at.
He starts working in a cigar factory.
There you have it.
He was a bit of a loner, but as things do, eventually it got out that he was a healer. He supplemented his cigar factory earnings by accepting voluntary offerings for his work as a powwow. One day, something occurred that really should have helped his reputation as a powwow.
You know what I think a neat episode would be? Is the follow-up and dig more into powwows. Because I'm really curious about powwows now.
Okay. Well, but,
sorry. I just...
I mean, there's lots of powwow stuff in here. So, yeah. One day, something happens at work. And this really should have helped him out. Like, this should have made his name. And people should know about him. And should be coming to him now for his healing powers. So, one day when work is over, Blymire and the other workers are leaving the factory when someone screams out in fear of a mad dog. The dog appears to be a collie and was foaming at the mouth. People try to escape by running into the factory, but unfortunately, the people leaving the factory are blocking the path back in. And so Blymire centers himself between the men and the dog. He utters an incantation and makes the sign of the cross over the dog's head. All of a sudden, the dog's mouth stopped foaming, and it seemed to be cured of rabies.
That's very cool.
So, Blymire pets the dog, and the dog just follows him down the street with his tail wagging.
He should have sought a career now in animal control. I mean, he could have been like one of the early animal control officers.
Well, unfortunately, a little bit after this occurs, Blymire begins to suffer from opnema again. He was certain someone was hexing him because obviously they're threatened about his growing reputation, healing powers, right?
So this is the battle of the powwows.
Yeah, so I wonder who gave it to him to begin with when he was five, because obviously he wasn't very good at anything and didn't know anything, and somebody's hexing him then. Maybe they were trying to get at his dad or his grandfather. Okay, so now he's convinced that someone's hexing him. So he quits his job, because that's a logical thing to do.
Right, that's a smart move.
In order to figure out who's hexing him.
I'm
so he needs
starving,
to spend...
I'm malnourished, but I don't need money.
Well, he thinks it's just a hex. He doesn't know that he's drinking too much or not eating enough.
How do you not know if you're drinking too much?
Okay. He begins to work odd jobs and practices powwow to get money. And he now lives in rooming houses. It was at one of these rooming houses where he meets his future wife, Lily. His health gradually improves, and it appears as though the hex has been removed, or just no longer works. Until tragedy strikes. So his first child with Lily dies a few weeks after birth.
Oh.
Then a second child passes away 3 days after birth. In the meantime, his health begins to decline again, and he loses his job.
So he got another job during that time, then. Or did
he
go
was
back
working,
to the cigar factory?
He was working odd jobs
off and on.
But I think that once he met Lily and they got married, he kind of was getting his stuff together, right?
Uh-huh. Well, so, it'd be kind of tough. I mean, two children like that, that's sad.
Yeah. So obviously there's some mental illness going on here at this point, maybe some depression and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's not really recognized or treated the way that it is now.
Correct.
So. Blymire seeks out consultation with Andrew Lenhart, who was a powerful witch that was feared by police and city officials. So
it was a dude.
Yes.
So a dude can be a witch.
I'm like, in the sources, they switch between powwow and witch, and I don't know if witch is a derogatory term for a powwow. Like, I don't know if that's an accepted term. Like, I don't know if I walked up to a powwow and called him or her a witch, if they would be like... offended.
Yeah, is it the black, the dark side versus the light side, where powwow is?
Yeah, I'm
like,
I feel like if somebody's afraid of this guy, that maybe
that can't be a good
thing. It means that he's bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, I believe that Nelson was called the Witch of Raymire, and when everything goes down in the newspaper, they call it like a witch hunt, basically.
The Witch of Raymire?
The Witch of Raymire, yeah. So, Lenhart tells Blymire that he was hexed by someone close to him, which obviously leads John to think that it's his own wife, Lily.
I could understand that. I mean, strictly speaking, not for me.
But I wonder if she, showed any, healing powers to him or let on that she had anything to do with it, you know?
Well...
Obviously, he's going a little crazy at this point.
strictly speaking, as a sane married man, I don't know that you guys ever give us any signs to understand what you're doing. I find myself often confused.
Why would she kill off her own two children?
I don't think she killed off her own two children. Maybe she just had bad aim.
Yeah, but he's saying that that's part of the hex, that his kids died because of the hex, and he thinks that his wife is hexing him. Why would she do that if that meant losing her kids?
She's a wackadoo.
Obviously, she becomes afraid of him. And her father hires a lawyer who has Bleymeyer evaluated by a psychiatrist. Hmm. The diagnosis is borderline psychoneurosis. Bleymeyer was committed to a mental hospital, which he eventually escapes from, like, I think 6 days later.
Well, by that was literally pretty tight security.
By literally just walking out the door.
There you have it.
And then there was never any effort made to bring him back. So he just goes about his life.
Is he like a Jedi? Is he like control the force around him and just like walks out?
In 1928, he begins working at the cigar factory again. Obviously, in a place like that, word spreads pretty quickly. Sure. So people know that he was in a mental hospital. And they're still out. Just like, okay, whatever. So at the cigar factory, he meets 14-year-old John Curry, who is also convinced he is hexed due to an abusive childhood. A little while after this, they meet Milton Hess, who believes he has also been hexed. So depending on who is telling this story...
Is there anybody in this community that doesn't think they're hexed?
Right. So depending on who is telling the story, some variations suggest that John convinced them both that they were hexed. So they're just having this bad luck. They don't know what's going on. And John basically says, hey, you're hexed, to get them on board because of what happens later. So Milton, so we're talking about Hess now. So just backtracking a little bit, Curry believes that he's hexed because he had an abusive childhood.
Right.
And Milton Hess
believes he's hexed
because of this. Milton and his wife are of Pennsylvania Dutch stock and follow all of the rules and regulations that Hexmeisters give them. Milton was a very successful farmer. They had great crops, an abundance of chicken eggs, and plenty of milk from the cows. His wife, Alice, another Alice, a different Alice, because remember, Nelson's wife is also named Alice.
Jeez.
Okay, so, and remember that now, Curry and Bleymeyer are both named John.
There is a definite lack of variety going on. Everybody's hexed, and they have the same names. So there's some challenges just to start with.
So his wife, Alice, has a stand at the farmer's market where she sells vegetables, flowers, and fruit. In 1926, Hess claims that things took a turn for the worst. Crops started to fail, chickens were stolen from him, and the cows would no longer eat, so they stopped producing milk. Milton's health was also declining. Wilbert.
I'm down with that. It's a totally new name.
His 17-year-old son was also affected psychologically by having to hear his father complain about the failures and lack of money, and his mother changing from the energetic, cheerful woman she was into a sad, silent one who withdrew from communicating with her family.
So basically a standard family.
Aw, do you feel like that about our family?
No. Well, not totally. But... I mean, there's times I feel hexed.
Do you feel like a failure?
No, I said I feel hexed. It's not my fault. I'm changing my name to Wilbur.
So Milton has to get a job as a truck driver, and Alice continues with her stand, now not because she likes it, but because it's financially necessary. So obviously they're hexed too, right?
I think we need to change up the thing to who was not hexed, and we'd have like four people to talk about. Right now, everybody in the town's hexed.
So, in June 1928, Hess, who is now living in a boarding house, so this is Wilbert Hess, by the way. It was really confusing because I couldn't tell, because they just start talking about Milton, and then it switches to Wilbert. So, Wilbert Hess, 17, is now living in a boarding house in an alley, and that's where he meets Bleymeyer, in this alley. And they begin to talk daily, and of course, the conversation eventually turns to...
hexes.
Around this time, Blymire is talking to Nellie Knoll, or the River Witch, or the Witch of Marietta. But she is also a well-known powwow.
I think if this wasn't not a podcast, if this is a video cast, I'd have to have a giant white paper study going to show the hierarchical relationships we have going here.
So he's going to her and asking for information on who is hexing him. He wants her to snitch on the powwow that's hexing him.
Okay? Snitches get stitches.
So after several meetups where she charges him $5 a session, she tells him it's Raymire. So at first, John doesn't believe this. How can it be, since he's removed hexes from John before when he was a small child? The witch has him place a dollar bill in the palm of his hand, and when she pulls it away, he claims to see the face and torso of Raymire.
What he saw was more of his money disappearing.
Yeah, she stole that dollar.
Right. You do that to me, like, hey, let me show you something, and you take the dollar away and I never see it again.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's usually a 10 or bigger.
I wish that was true.
No, it's a plastic. It's a card. Let me show you something with this card, and then it's gone.
Give them all to me. So Milton Hess, or no, Wilbert Hess brings Blymire back to his farm because Blymire's a powwower, right? And wants him to see the conditions of the farm for himself. He asks Blymire, who is hexing my family? And for some odd reason in the text, like in the source says that Blymire can't recall.
Oh, of course not.
So Blymire went to Nellie Knoll
and
paid her like $6 or more than that, because he went to her 6 times and paid $5 each time, and then she like stole that dollar from him or
so
whatever.
So that's $31 he's down. That's 10% the cost of the 86 acres that were purchased back in whenever.
And
he got about an acre of land for that.
After $31, he still can't remember who hexed him, right?
And I think there's a deeper underlying problem.
So they both head back to Nellie Knoll so she can make some more money, where she again renames Nelson Raymire. She's like, please forget a couple more times.
Yeah, these guys are cash cows.
So she renames Nelson Raymire as the hexer and tells the guys that Raymire is also hexing Curry as well. So remember, we have 14-year-old Curry who's being abused by his parents, or he was abused as a child, and he's also being hexed by Raymire. So for some reason, Raymire really hates a lot of people and is just hexing them all.
I think Raymire,
including
this
14-year-old child.
I think Raymire is just brutally unlucky that his name is too easy to remember. Was his first name John?
No, it was Nelson.
Ah, see, Nelson there Raymire. You have it. He was a unique individual.
She instructs them to go to Raymire's house and get his copy of Powwows, or they also call it Long Lost Friend. It's a book that has spells and stuff in it. And she tells them to burn it, or if they couldn't do that, they must get a lock of his hair and bury it 6 to 8 feet underground.
Okay, so...
So some sources say that they have to get both and bury them, and some sources say that they can get either, but both have to be buried. So in this one, it says that the book has to be burned or the hair has to be buried. So it's some variation of those things. Do you have a question?
Outside of Nellie Knoll.
Uh-huh.
There's nobody else, including probably Raymire himself, who knows that...
This is going on.
He's the cursor.
Yeah.
So he's sitting at home, la-di-da, having his scones and clotted cream.
Yeah, he's not European.
Okay, and then he's having whatever. He's having his shoe fly pie. And a piping hot cup of coffee. Unbeknownst to him, his book and his hair are currently hunted.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they go about this in a very odd way. Okay. So once Blymire knows who has hexed them, they hold this secret meeting of men, which includes Milton, or I'm sorry. Yeah, it includes Milton and his older brother, Clayton, and also his son, Wilbert Hess. And then obviously Blymire and Curry.
There's 5 people in this secret meeting.
Yeah, there's 5.
Okay.
So They make plans to visit Raymire simply to get the book or some hair and do as they were instructed just so they could remove the hex. So at this point, they're not going there to kill him. They're going there to get what they need and move on with their lives because they're sick of...
So the five of these guys are going to roll up on his property with a pair of scissors, request a book, and snatch some of his hair, give him a fist bump, say, thanks, brother, and that's what their plan is.
Well, he wouldn't have died if that's...
I get that, but what you're saying is they weren't intending to kill him.
They weren't, but these five people... Well, remember, Blindmire thinks that he's this amazing powwow, right? So... It comes in later what his plan is.
Okay.
It obviously wasn't very well thought out because Wilbert ends up going like, I'm not coming because I don't feel good. So now it's just...
Four.
So now it's just Blindmire and Curry. No, because none of the Hesses come.
Good gravy.
So Clayton was supposed to drive. So Clayton is the older brother of Wilbert, I think. Or he's Milton's brother. I'm not sure. But Clayton was supposed to drive. Because he was the only member that had a car. Okay. Well, it's 1928.
Yeah, right. I get that.
No one has a car, right? Okay.
Or scissors.
So, Wilbert ends up saying he doesn't feel well. Wah, wah, wah. So, he doesn't go. Okay? So, Blindmire says, that's cool. We don't need you. Me and Curry will just go. And that's what they did.
So Blindmire and Curry head over to Ray Meyer's house.
So November 26th, 1928, the guys get there and knock on the door and no one answers. So they walk to his wife's house.
To Ray Meyer's wife's house.
Yes.
They're estranged, lives on the same property. Yes. Right.
So they walk to his wife's house and they're told that he's probably at his lady friend's house.
Okay. All righty.
So they walk back and notice that a light is shining on the second floor. Blindmire knocks and is greeted by Raymire, who is a lot bigger than he remembers and also looks pretty mean. I don't know what time it is, but...
So this is
was entertaining a lady friend, then I'd be pretty mad too, yeah, right?
I was like, I'm busy.
So Blindmire basically invites himself in, and Raymire agrees and walks into the parlor where they sit down and start talking.
How does he invite himself in?
He's like, hey, what's up? Can we come in?
Yeah, that's weird. Okay.
So, Blindmire's asking questions about the book, and Raymire confirms that he has one and he knows about it and whatever. And they start talking about something else, and finally Raymire's like, hey, why are you guys even here?
Right?
What are you doing? Like, let's cut the chit-chat and let's get down to why you're
We're here for hair and a book.
Yeah. And Blindmire's like, oh, you healed me when I was a boy of my hexes, and I picked potatoes for you as payment, and blah, blah, blah.
Did that happen? Or was he making that up?
I mean, I'm sure that Raymire would be like, hey, no, you didn't, if that wasn't true.
Right. Maybe.
I don't know. No one knows, because Raymire can't tell anybody what was said, right? This is just going off of what these guys are saying.
Right. Well, this is just history, right?
So... The conversation continues, and Blindmire attempts to mentally will Raymire to hand over the book.
All this before Star Wars was ever made. These guys are like thinking they're Jedis or
something. But this obviously does not work. Yeah. Because firstly, let's just consider, at the beginning, we're talking about Blindmire, and we know that he's not very powerful.
So do you think these guys are like sitting there staring into Raymire's eyes and thinking to themselves, give me the book.
The other day I was at the store and I feel like we have like, you know, this
psychic frequency, connection.
Like this connection, and we like are thinking the same thing. And so remember, something was wrong with my car and you were answering your phone and I'm sitting in the store like, please answer your phone. Please answer your phone. Hoping that you would check your phone.
That's completely different.
Maybe it's like that though. Maybe
you weren't
like,
staring into my eyes, willing me to answer my phone.
Oh. Yeah, but our connection is more powerful than the connection between Blindmire and Raymire.
Awesome. That means I'll have worse taxes. So keep going.
So Blindmire is willing this, mentally trying to will Raymire, who is a 60-year-old powwow and obviously is more powerful than Blindmire.
And more intelligent.
To hand over the book. Okay, so Raymire is finally like, hey, Good chat. I'm tired. I'm going to bed. Feel free to sleep downstairs.
What in the world?
This is 1928. This isn't like...
Well, you know what? No. They were very hospitable.
And he's a big dude. He's like over 6 feet tall. He's a muscular guy. He still runs his farm and stuff. Like, he can take them. He can take them.
What are these two scrappers going to do? Yeah. Okay. Obviously, he was wrong.
So Curry falls asleep immediately. He's tired. He goes to sleep. But Blymire, he stays awake trying to will the old powwower into giving him the book.
Oh, my.
Okay. So finally, he woke Curry and told him that he could not control Raymire's mind. Duh. They wonder if they should just try to force him to give the book up or a lock of hair, and they both decide that the man could easily overpower both of them. So he decides that they need help.
Okay.
So on Wednesday, November...
I am completely in agreement that they need help. I'm not sure that we agree on the help they need, but they need help.
You got to be a little bit sympathetic because this is like what they believe in. This is what their lives are based on. And they like truly believe that Nellie Knoll has told them the truth that Raymire
I am so thankful that today we can depend on much more factual information from the internet. I mean, imagine if we had to go off of stuff that wasn't true. At least we have Google.
Okay. So on Wednesday, November 27th, the night of the full moon and the eve before Thanksgiving, Clayton, who is a Hess, drove the trio to Raymire's Hollow. The three walk up to the house. So we have Wilbert, we have John Curry, and we have John Blymire. Okay, so we have a 14-year-old, a now 18-year-old, and a 32-year-old. Okay. Because Blymire knows he can't do it by himself. So I think that...
Did you say 14, 18, 32?
Huh. I think that Blymire
knew... 14 and 18-year-old's age equals the 32-year-old. I wonder if there's some numerology in here.
So, yeah, I think that Blymire actually went to Hess and to Curry and convinced them that they were hexed just so they would help him do this. Because he knew he couldn't take on Raymire by himself. Mm. So, on Wednesday, November 27th, they get out of the car. The three men walk up to the house. They now are more aggressive when they demand that he gives the book to them. And he refuses and throws his wallet at them, thinking that they're trying to rob him, right?
There's a real communications issue.
Yeah.
Give me your book. No, here, have my wallet.
The three men then attack Nelson. Blymire wraps rope around his neck, then the trio fight with the old man. Curry gets a block of wood and hits Raymire over the head. Later on, Blymire blames Curry in this instance for killing him. He says that this killed him.
So it's a block of wood did it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So the old man was kicked in the head and the stomach, and his face was battered. Blymire said he took a few breaths, and then he died.
Oh.
At 12:01 a.m. on Thanksgiving morning. So the men go inside, because obviously that wasn't enough. Killing him wasn't enough. Right?
Okay.
So they ransack his house and find some money, and then they decide that they need to get rid of the evidence. So they tie Nelson to a chair and then douse his body in kerosene. And then they set him on fire, thinking the house will burn down with him. The house does not burn down. A neighbor passing by Raymire's house hears one of the mules braying outside. The man checks on the mule and discovers it has not been fed. He knocks on the door and no one answers, but it's unlocked. So he goes
how
in.
How long did this... what's the... timeline between when these guys did this, set him on fire, and then the neighbor finds the mule braying.
I think it was like 3 days.
So there's a fair timeline. So, yeah. Because,
I mean, the houses are spaced out pretty good.
No,
you know?
Get that, and there's not a lot of traffic. But
mm-hmm. And his wife doesn't want anything to do with him. She's like,
all right, so 3 days go by, and his body is strapped to a chair, wet and partially burnt with kerosene, and the neighbor comes up.
I think his body is pretty,
very well burnt.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, He knocks on the door and no one answers. He goes in and sees Raymeyer's corpse laying on the floor. It didn't take police long to arrest Blymeyer, Curry, and Wilbert for the murder of Raymeyer.
How they knew. Right, okay.
Well, I'm sure they asked around. Like, nothing like that stays quiet.
Well, they did. Raise your hand. Yep, it was us.
Okay. They, all three confessed.
Okay.
They confessed to it. They immediately confessed, and Blymeyer says, even though he didn't find the book or do what Nellie told him to, he felt at peace.
Okay.
So the trials began on January 9th of 1929, which is just a few months later. So we get through the holidays, January 9th. The judge decreed that all mention of hexes and witchcraft in the confessions be edited out before they were admitted to records.
Okay.
The attempts of the defense attorneys to make hexes and witchcraft a matter of record via testimony were thrown right out the window. The judge makes them say that the motive was robbery. And when any of the men strays from this at all, they kind of get like verbally attacked. And then they have to change what they're saying. So
a great example of due process and a legal yeah. system.
So the trials were some of the speediest in Pennsylvania history. By obstruction of justice, the judge got what he wanted. Guilty verdicts. Blymeyer and Curry were charged with first-degree murder, and Hess was charged with second-degree murder.
To be fair, they were guilty. I mean,
oh, yeah, they admitted to it. They admitted that they killed him. I mean, it shouldn't matter that
I'm down with the speedy trial. They admitted they did it. I mean,
so.
And hexes is I don't think that's a legal defense. Maybe it was then. I don't know.
Well, this is a little bit after Salem, right? So we're just getting over that. The Salem witch trials and the whole witch hunt thing. So, Blymeyer and Curry were given life in prison, and Hess was given 10 to 20 years. In 1934, Hess and Curry were paroled. They lived quiet lives in the York area. Curry even became an artist and then died in 1962. Blymeyer was finally paroled in 1953 and returned to York and worked as a janitor. And that's the end of the story.
So, okay. In summary, just to answer. So, it's definitely odd. It's definitely unusual. I mean, it is a story that talks a lot about how way back in the day, people believe so much. It's really no different to today. I mean, people believe in Google and they do the same crazy stuff.
Well,
is there any cool ghost stories out of this? Is there any sightings? Is there been any new craziness on the property? Is there something more to it other than three wackadoos kill a wackadoo?
Most of that information came from phantomsandmonsters.com, and he has a pretty good ghost story, and I actually have been in contact with a couple other people who grew up near there and have other information.
I mean, when I listen to this story, and I mean, whether or not, I don't know if Raymeyer was causing all these hexes or not, I guess it requires more research, but obviously the poor dude was in his house, may or may not have been doing anything wrong, and three people come up and take him out in a not so nice way.
Yeah.
And so I would completely understand if we've got kind of a grouchy spirit in the neighborhood over there making some things happen. It'd be interesting to hear if there were some stories or some actual footage.
So, the author of Phantoms and Monsters says that he remembers tales of paranormal activity in Raymeyer Hollow and the reports of strange apparitions said to be Nelson Raymeyer's spirit. And why wouldn't it be? Because, I mean, three rando guys that he doesn't even really know came to his house and beat him to death and then ended up living pretty normal lives after they got out of prison.
I mean, and this whole story to me, it's not really a scary story. If anything,
it's sad. Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's you got a whole community that believes they're hexed. They all have the same first and last name, so that's sad to start with. We have the lack of Google where they can get factual information, so they go on the Hex elimination spree, some lady named
Nellie Knoll
rakes in the dough off of some other folk, probably bought some land, and then it all ends up with poor Ray Myers ghost wandering the land. I mean, he'd probably want to sit down and have tea with you. I might not, might be crazy, might not be tea, but he'd probably love a shot of whiskey.
Okay. So this is just one story. So it says, during my senior year in high school, I decided to make a short trip to Raymire Hollow to see what all the fuss was. I had found a copy of The Long Lost Friend, which, as we know, is the book that Nelson pretty much died over, and decided to carry it with me. Like I said earlier, I'm a bit superstitious, and I thought the book may protect me in some way. I made the journey alone in mid-October 1975. It was late afternoon when I arrived at a locked gate that was suspended over the access road that had a no trespassing sign attached to it. At that time, the sparse open areas were overgrown with briars and high weeds. The woods were very thick and dark, and as I started walking on the road, I could make out the roof of the small house jutting over the trees. As I approached, I noticed what looked like an older man in dark pants and a jacket standing on the road near the bend that led to the house. I estimated he was about 150 feet in front of me. It looked like he was searching for something because he was looking face down in a peculiar manner. I stopped walking and stood for a few seconds, watching this person go back and forth across the road, never raising their head. So I decided it was time to find out if this was a caretaker or if it was okay for me to proceed any further, even though I knew I was trespassing. I shouted, "Hello, sir." No response. So I was about to shout again, thinking this person was hard of hearing or possibly ignoring me. Just as I began to open my mouth to shout, this person quickly looked up and... Now, I realized that I was a fair distance away, but this person that I swear to this day had no facial features, no eyes, no mouth, no nose, just a head. I spun around and hauled my butt back to the car. The ghost hunt was over. I wheeled my Mustang out of that hollow onto the main road in record time. Honestly, I don't remember the drive home. I was absolutely stunned by the experience. A few days later, my girlfriend and I were in my room and she found The Long Lost Friend on my desk. I was lying on the bed with headphones on when I looked over and saw that she was looking in the book. As I watched her, I noticed that there was writing on the book cover. I had purchased the book as new, had never written in it or had it anywhere other than when I was at Raymire Hollow. As I looked closer, there was an NR written in pencil. The next day, I lit the grill in the backyard and promptly burned the book and buried the ashes.
So Nelson Raymire initials.
Yeah. I wasn't leaving anything to chance. A few weeks later, I purchased a new copy of The Long Lost Friend, and it's been with me since.
Huh.
Oh my gosh, that was kind of creepy. The no eyes, no mouth, no nose. I know you're not scared of anything.
Yeah, that doesn't really scare me. I can remember that. Now, there might have been alcohol involved, but I remember seeing images just like that.
Be quiet. So I got this email this morning from a Benjamin Colon. Okay, so this is his story.
Is this a long one?
It's pretty long, yeah. But it's very creepy, and it supports the theory that, well, he says it in here actually about, I told you about York County apparently is the place where the seven gates of hell are located. And they think that it's tied into...
I want to do some research on that one. I want you to do the research and then bring me the story.
Well, so there's not much to tell because the locals there say that it's... I think it's Hellam... Hellam County or Hellam Township. They say that it's not true. They've even gotten rid of all of the gates.
All the markers or whatever.
Because people kept coming there and were trying to go through and it's trespassing and it's on people's property and they got sick of it and they're like, get the heck out of here. Yeah. And a cult
comes. I'm gate number three, get away.
Like people come and do like occult rituals and stuff because they think that that's the location of the seven gates of hell.
If Nellie Knoll was there, she'd be raking in the dough.
For sure.
She'd like have gates 1 through 6.
So... It was the summer of 1996. So the last story was 1975. This is 1996. In search of a new fishing spot in York County, I went to visit a friend for his suggestion. The friend was no other than horror writer Brian Keene, before his leap into stardom. He suggested I visit a spot in Southern York. With this new location, off I went. I get to this location in Southern York and find the spot. It was a tranquil pond, very nice indeed. I start fishing along with the other folks who were there doing the same. Around dawn, everyone started to leave. It was starting to get dark. Suddenly, a car approaches, a 1970s model. The car parked on the parking lot. Wait a minute,
I'm confused.
What?
Around dawn, everyone started to leave.
Yeah.
And then it was starting to get dark.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so he's there all day then?
Yeah. He's just hanging out. Well, I don't know.
What if it's a typo? Okay.
No, I don't think so. A 1970s model. The car parked on the parking lot. In the parking lot. From it, two girls emerged and walked towards the edge of the pond. They looked strange. Long hair, hippie attire, etc. They then sat by the edge of the pond. At this time, it was just me and these girls. I continue fishing. It is now getting very dark. That's when the girls decide to leave. I watched them float over to their car and shortly thereafter sped away. Another few minutes pass, and now it's dark enough that I need my lantern. I begin to use the lantern to illuminate my way. As I continue to fish, I begin to get a strange feeling, a sensation, one that grew by the minute into hysteria, but I pressed on. For as much as I tried, I could not shake this feeling. It was like something evil was watching me. Behind me on my right shoulder, I managed to turn around and look into the darkness. Nothing. No apparitions, no sounds, nothing. Yet this feeling would not leave me. Suddenly, I felt an urge to leave. But, like a wounded animal, I knew it would be best to do so quickly and without too much notice. I gathered my belongings in a matter of fast fashion, then I sprinted out of there. I reached my car and sped out of the park, fearing for my life. Why? I don't know. A few days later, I go visit Brian Keene. I begin to tell him what had happened when he stopped me in my tracks. He says to me, "Those girls, they are ghosts." I'm now thinking, "What the hell? You are messing with me." He then tells me, "Do you know where you were?" I said, "No. Where?" "You were in Raymeyer's Hollow." Immediately, I'm like, "What? What's that?" And then he begins to tell me the famed story of the Hex murders. Again, I'm thinking Brian is messing with me. So I head out to Martin Library in the city of York. There, I research the story and I find it is real. I go back to talk to Brian and I learn more about the Hex murders. According to him, Nelson Raymeyers had one of the few original copies of the Lost Friend book. The assailants who killed him thought he had hexed them, and the only way to remove the spell was by stealing the book and getting him to lift the spell. Well, we all know he was killed there in the hollow. Prior to his death, apparently Nelson had made a pact with the devil to open the seven gates of hell in York to protect the book and his life. The devil betrayed him and Nelson was killed. As a result, the land known as the Raymeyer's Hollow is not haunted. Here's where the story gets weird. Oh, I think it means is haunted.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it would be is haunted because it would be
as a result, the land known as Raymeyer's Hollow is haunted.
Yeah.
Here's where the story gets weird. It would be natural to assume I had I been born in York County, I would have some knowledge of the Hex murders. I didn't. I was born in Puerto Rico and came to York at the age of 12. I served 4 years in the Marines and almost saw combat twice. I was in Somalia, also among many other deployments. I have slept in the woods in operations. I have been in the woods hunting. Never ever have I felt afraid or in danger. Yet that day while fishing, I felt that I needed to leave right away or I would be killed. Why? I never saw glowing eyes. I never heard any voices. I never saw any apparitions. So why would I be so afraid for my life? To this day, I can't describe why I felt so scared. It was a feeling I have never felt ever again. Now knowing what transpired at the Hollow, it all makes sense. That land is not sacred. I went back about a year later to try and fish for trout. Again, I had to leave. This time, it was daytime, yet I again felt watched. Something evil lurks in that area for sure. As for the girls, apparently, they are one of the apparitions you will see if you are at the Hollow. Apparently, they show up to warn people. A few months later, I asked my father, who was deep in spiritualism, his thoughts on all of this. His answer was even more creepy. He said the girls were like angels, there to warn me. He said the feeling was likely a demon. His thoughts were, had I not left that night, I may have been found dead, possibly drowned. He said demons who are within their portals or open gates can emerge and swoop down and attack you. Most people who fall prey to this are found drowned or dead of natural causes. Yet, it was probably a demon who caused your death. To this day, I can't explain what really happened that day. This has, however, given me a newfound appreciation for the afterlife and the supernatural.
I mean, I don't think there's anything in there that is unbelievable. Maybe it's the fact that between the seven gates of hell and the incident at Ray Myers Hollow, it makes it, you know, an area that's a little bit busier.
Cursed,
right?
Sure. Hexed.
Like Hex Hollow.
So, I can honestly say that after this, I probably wouldn't be upset if I never heard the word hexed ever again.
I don't think it goes that easy because there's a whole the hex army in this story. So it's interesting. It's an interesting story. It's neat how small towns so close have so much interesting history. I
don't think I'll ever go there.
No, I think we should. I'd like to go find that pond and go trout fishing.
So I have one more encounter story with the house.
A long one?
No, it's very short. So I messaged a guy by the name of Jeff Horton, and this is a quote. My dad grew up near there. He played cards in the house. He saw blood dripping down the walls. End quote.
Again, I've had nights like that with alcohol involved. But, yeah.
So, yeah. So, I know that a few years back, I think actually 2013, the fire department in New York County was doing hay rides at the house, and then you could go through the house in a tour. And the people who went...
Must be Nellie Knoll's great-great-grandson's a chief.
And they say that the clock in the kitchen is stuck at 12:01 a.m., which is the time.
How do you know it's a.m.? It was an analog clock, so there was no a.m. p.m.
It's stuck at 12:01.
So stuck. And so it's right twice a day at 12:01. Lunchtime and midnight. So
12:01 is supposedly the time that Nelson Raymeyer died.
I think that's a great idea. You take that, you dial that to 12:01, and tell everybody that's where it stopped. Pull the battery out of the back so it never does it again.
So you don't believe that?
I don't know if I believe that. I mean, back then it wouldn't have been a battery clock. Well, if he was that powerful,
and if he did have like a pact with the devil or whatever to protect him,
well, that didn't work out so well. Maybe he was
so powerful that the house... Just... Well, the house didn't burn down.
Well, yeah, like, well, his pact didn't work out well. His book went missing and he died.
The devil failed him.
No, the devil didn't fail him. If you bring a snake into the house, don't be surprised when it bites you. That's just the devil did his job. Raymeyer. Well,
okay.
I think Raymeyer, honestly, I think poor Raymeyer is probably the innocent guy in this whole thing.
Well, I guess that concludes.
We'll never really know until we make a trip to the trout pond at Hell's Hollow.
Concludes our first episode. I would just like to take a second to thank Jeff Horton, Benjamin Colin, Rob Phoenix, and Shane Free. Thanks.
I'd like to thank Nelson Raymeyer. Because I'm sure poor guy doesn't get any thanks at all.
I hope that... What is it? The 25th right now? So I hope Thursday...
His 91st Thanksgiving. I hope he has a little bit of peace and some rest.
I hope some people say some nice prayers for Nelson Raymeyer.
Yeah, and the other... And maybe the town has people with regular names now. Instead of everybody being John...
And Alice.
This was fun.
Well, marriage is a scream. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the first episode ever of Marriage is a Scream. I just wanted to let you guys know that I'm thankful that you guys are listening to our podcast. And, I also want to say that if anybody notices any mistakes or information that isn't correct, please bring it to our attention. And at the beginning of our next episode, we will address those edits. Thanks.